The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling shingles and especially looking at postherpetic neuralgia, which can be a life-altering experience. This is with guest expert Dr. Maria Carmen Wilson of the USF College of Medicine in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, with a combined 7,500 hours of education during these two symposia, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission, to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And I'd like to share with you that the Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper is carrying a column of mine every 2 months. It comes out every 2 months, and you can find that newspaper. It's free and can be found at over 3,000 Tampa Bay area locations, such as medical offices, health clubs, specialty organic grocery stores, hair and beauty salons, and so forth. These articles are educational, informational, and you'll find them to be resourceful. Today, Maria Carmen Wilson is with us, and Maria, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
She is professor of neurology at the University of South Florida in Tampa. She serves as the associate director of the neurology residency program, associate director for the pain medicine fellowship, director of the headache medicine fellowship, and medical director of the headache and pain center at Tampa General Hospital. She earned her bachelor of science and medical degree at the University of Cadiz Medical School in Spain, where she was born and raised. She has completed training in neurology, followed by a fellowship in pain medicine headache at the University of South Florida College of Medicine. She is triple boarded, that is, triple board certification in the fields of neurology, pain medicine, and headache medicine. A skilled educator, Dr. Wilson was a 1997 recipient of the Department of Neurology Teacher of the Year Award, the 2002 Distinguished Faculty Award, and in 2008, the Outstanding Headache and Pain Fellowship Teaching Award at USF. She's authored a book on the subject of headache, as well as numerous articles and several book chapters in the field of headache and pain. Dr. Wilson has conducted multiple clinical trials and is a national and international speaker. She's also an active member of several professional societies, including the American Headache Society, International Headache Society, the Academy of Neurology, Spanish Pain Society, and the American Pain Society. Maria is on the board of directors of the American Headache Society and the American Council for Headache Education. And so the topic today, of course, postherpetic neuralgia after shingles, which produces significant and debilitating pain, is right up your alley, isn't it?
It sure is.
Well, let's start at the beginning and explain to our listeners. And by the way, before we get started with the show, this topic is especially of interest, of course, to all patients with a history of shingles or that are experiencing postherpetic neuralgia. And those of you who have it now know exactly what we're talking about already. But in addition to those that are suffering from postherpetic neuralgia and shingles, it also is very important and timely for all persons 60 and above, 68 years of age and above. For that matter, I would even say 50 years of age and above, or anyone who has any concern about shingles and even chickenpox, as you'll find out these viruses are related. So that accounts for many, many people, and we encourage you to call in with your questions or comments or observations that you've had on yourself personally or your family. Our number here to call is 289-1860. That's in Hillsborough County. 289-1860 outside of Hillsborough County is toll-free, 877-969-8600 for those that are streaming live, 877-969-8600. So, Maria, let's begin. Shingles. Well, people know of shingles as by what's protecting their roof of their homes. What is shingles in the medical world?
Shingles in the medical world means zoster, herpes zoster viral infection. Actually, shingles comes from the Latin cingulum, which is a belt type of, because it goes around. And typically, shingles, as we know it, or zoster viral infection, affects a dermatome typically and most commonly maybe in the torso, in the thoracic region.
And that's why it's called shingles belt, meaning it, when it presents itself as a rash, it's almost like a belt wrapping around the side abdomen or chest.
That's right, because it goes around like a belt, like, so it's nothing to do with shingles on the roof.
Let's go a little further into explaining why it presents in such a unique fashion, which helps clinically to make a diagnosis. Why does it limit itself to that, like a belt wrapping around the abdomen or chest?
What it is that when people are exposed typically in childhood to the varicella virus, which is what causes chickenpox, after the infection is over, the virus goes to sleep. And it goes to sleep in a location that we call dorsal root ganglia, and it stays dormant there and inactive because it doesn't replicate until there is a situation of either immunosuppression, in that your immune system is down, or immunosenescence, which means that we get old. Mm-hmm. And therefore, what is called the cell-mediated immunity cannot keep this virus in check anymore.
Now, the important point is the dorsal root ganglia, where the virus goes to sleep, is in the spinal cord.
Correct, and in the upper structures for the cranial nerves as well, because let's not forget that one of the worst kinds of shingles mm-hmm. is herpes ophthalmicus.
Absolutely, and we can talk a lot about that. That's an area that I work a lot in. But when it goes to sleep in the spinal cord or the brain, then when it reemerges later on, as we get older, or as you said, if you're a person becomes immunosuppressed or immune senescent, aging, and the immune system no longer can keep it in check, then it comes out and it expresses itself along the distribution
of a dermatome, which is the distribution of a nerve root. So what happens, the spinal nerves exit from the spinal canal by the foramina, and then at each segment, there is one spinal nerve root that exits and innervates, takes care of a particular part of the body, an area, if mm-hmm. you will.
So therefore, if a person has this distribution of the rash over their sacrum, then correspondingly, that is the location of where the virus went to sleep in that person's central nervous system in the sacral area down low, as opposed to someone who had this dermatome, this rash develop on the chest, then it would be in the thoracic area.
That is correct.
Okay. So how common is, or let's stay basic right now. So when this reemerges, if you just discuss the issue of this particular virus, it causes a lot of inflammation of the nerves.
Yes. It causes a lot of inflammation to the point that if a spinal tap is performed, one is going to see an increased number of the cells. We're going to see an increased number of protein. There's really a reaction. And then the nerve root is going to be really irritated, and it's going to transmit all of that along the nerve and the very frequently the corresponding skin, which is what you can see the vesicles erupting. However, rarely you may not see the skin manifestations. We call that zoster sinehepity, and it doesn't mean that there has not been a reactivation. But
usually you have this rash, which are little vesicles with fluid inside.
Fluid inside.
Where the virus is actively replicating and dividing. But rarely you can have this infection without the vesicles.
Yes. And I have some patients that were very puzzled, and I've seen a lot of physicians, and because they didn't have the skin manifestations, they did not receive the diagnosis. They did not know why they had so much pain, and yet clinically it was pretty evident that it wasn't a particular dermatoma distribution, the type of pain, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's significant because early treatment of this, I believe within the 72 hours, at least in the ophthalmic literature when it affects the eyes, can make a difference as to the prognosis and outcome.
It's very crucial because if you are late in the diagnosis, then the antiviral medication doesn't work as well, and the postherpetic neuralgia, the pain, is less likely to be prevented as well.
So now let me give you the phone number to call in again with a question. It's 289-1860, 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough County is 877, toll-free, 877-969-8600. And before we go to break, let's bring up the notion of this postherpetic neuralgia. People who have it know all about it. People that have had shingles and maybe not experienced it yet should probably know about it. But many people maybe not have heard about it, don't understand it, that are younger. What is the big deal about postherpetic neuralgia?
The big deal is that it can be so painful, so disabling and impactful, and it may be it's pain that won't go away. For some people, it will go away. Younger people probably would not even develop it, but older people will develop it, and in some cases, the response to medication is very poor no matter what we do.
And how many people get, I'm just reading here from an article in JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association, the incidence of herpes zoster is approximately, 1 million a year, a million persons a year. And how about the postherpetic neuralgia? What's the incidence of that?
It's about 50% of those patients.
Okay.
Especially after the age of 60. And in the younger age, people that are not immunosuppressed, depending on the articles, anywhere from 1.5 to up to 5. So it's much, much lower. So this is really a common complication of zoster in the elderly.
Here it says, and this is a reference to made in this article, 1 month after the onset of skin rash, 60 to 70% of patients older than 50 have persistent pain.
Absolutely.
70%, up to 70% with persistent pain. Postherpetic neuralgia is defined as pain persisting at 4 months after the disease onset, the most debilitating complication of shingles. Okay, we're going to go to a quick break and come back with more on shingles and postherpetic neuralgia on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm with Dr. Marie Carmen Wilson. Be right back.
Midterm elections are just weeks away. It's time we all get involved in reclaiming America. Make plans now to meet Bill Bennett and Mike Gallagher, September 30th at the Stras Center in Tampa. Go to talkradio860.com now for your tickets.
Attention, Tampa. Your neighbors are talking about it. Your coworkers are talking about it. Even your broker is talking about it.
Hey, Phil, I'm a big fan of yours. Great teacher.
Phil, thank you very much. I personally want to thank you for saving me a fortune at the end of 05.
Never miss your show, and if the house is on fire, I don't leave till the show is over.
You've been really great for me. I've been with you for about 5 years, and I've just moved to a new level of trading.
Find out what everybody's talking about. Join Phil Grandy and Phil's Gang. 3 to 4 on Tampa's Talk Radio 860 WGUL. And at philsgang.com.
Now is the time for Reclaiming America, the Taking Back Congress Tour, Thursday, September 30th at the Straz Center in Tampa, featuring insight and inspiration from Bill Bennett and Mike Gallagher. Go to talkradio860.com now for your tickets.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010, and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to our show today. We're targeting shingles and post-herpetic neuralgia. And I understand about 400,000 new cases of post-herpetic neuralgia occur annually in the United States, according to this article in JAMA. And I'd like to just read one brief also sentence here describing post-herpetic neuralgia. Patients may experience a variety of sensory abnormalities, including, and maybe you can help define these for the listeners, paresthesias, dysesthesias, and allodynia, in addition to neuropathic pain.
Yes, definitely. Paresthesias and dysesthesias are abnormal painful sensations that could be pins and needles, a tingling sensation, and also a burning. That's very, very typical of postherpetic neuralgia, burning sensation, sometimes sharpshooting, what we call lancinating, is also typical. And believe it or not, itching. I've had some patients that have been very disabled with itching, even more so than pain.
One person described it, this is from a Wall Street Journal article in 08, as small rockets blowing you apart in that area of the rash or involvement. Again, something that you'd want to avoid. Another author, totally debilitating, life-changing, a lightning storm.
Lightning storm. I've heard that from my patients as well.
Something you want to avoid. So let's go to the phone and online. And before we go to Robin, who's on line one, again, we encourage each and every one of you to call now with your questions, comments, experiences with this really quite debilitating disease. 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County, 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, for those that are maybe streaming live online, there's 877-969-8600. And also, if anyone has a question on the vaccine for shingles, again, we encourage you to call in now for those questions. The vaccine, we'll be talking about it more later in the show, but you may have a specific target question. We encourage you to call now. It's a great time to do so. Robin, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hello.
Now, you're a patient of Dr. Wilson's.
Yes, I am.
Tell us, if you would be kind enough, how old you are, what your experience is with this disease.
Yes, I'm 71 years old.
Okay.
And about 3 years ago, my husband of 50 years was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Okay.
And that was a very stressful time for us, and especially for me, taking care of him with his appointments. And I noticed that I developed a rash and blisters underneath my left breast around my bra line.
Okay.
And
never developed anything like this before.
Never have. And someone looked at it and said, those look like shingle blisters.
Okay.
And they were like bubbles, like regular blisters. Mm-hmm. And then finally they crusted over. But the pain afterwards was just unbearable.
When did the pain begin, Robin? Immediately or days, weeks later?
It was probably, it was during the time that the blisters came on.
Okay.
And then as they crusted, it seemed the pain to get worse. It lingered on.
Mm-hmm.
And the itching, as was what I heard, the itching was just almost unbearable. Sometimes it was worse than the pain. And because it was a burning itching and you really couldn't do anything about it. And so I really thought I was having a heart attack because it was such a stabbing type pain.
And left side of your body.
With this, mm-hmm. Yes. But
what'd you do?
Well, I was going to go to the emergency room, and then I decided I didn't have all of the symptoms as a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to my primary care physician. And he put me on a dose of Elavil.
Did he concur with the diagnosis of shingles?
Yes, he
okay.
did state that it was shingles. And I started off on Elavil. However, as the dosage increased to try to get the pain under control and the shingles under control, I had horrible side effects, bad side effects. So he then referred me on to a pain specialist, Dr. Wilson.
Okay.
And I don't know how much I can thank her enough, where I'm now able to live a more regular life. I am on right now a dose of 50 milligrams of, I don't know if I can say the medication on air, but
yeah, sure.
Of Lyrica, 50 milligrams of Lyrica. Mm-hmm. And I'm on Cymbalta, let me see here, 30 milligrams of Cymbalta.
Mm-hmm.
And I have now been able to function without, you know, that horrible pain that I went through for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what else to do. I mean, it was a wonderful relief to finally be able to also going back to some port of normalcy in my life.
How quickly did the rash come on? Once you, is it something that you felt a little tingling before the skin eruptions developed, or did it all happen within, say, 24 hours?
It came on very quickly. I was surprised, I'll be honest with you. I noticed like a little itching, like a
okay.
little scratching, but
Robin,
like a redness.
Robin, we'll be right back. We've got a hard break. We'll be right back with more on shingles and post-herpetic neuralgia. Call now with your questions, 289-1860. Be right back.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. BP's blown-out well is no longer a threat to the Gulf of Mexico. That's the official word today, saying the well is effectively dead. The declaration from the federal government's point man, Coast Guard Admiral Than Allen. Retired General Colin Powell says he doesn't know whether the U.S. is winning the war in Afghanistan. The former Secretary of State and Joint Chiefs Chairman says it's hard to tell if the Taliban are really being defeated or just moving from one place to another. Dutch authorities say a British man of Somali ancestry has been arrested at Amsterdam's airport for possible links to a terror group. They say he was arriving on a trip from the British authorities say after flying in from Liverpool, England, he was arriving, but he didn't get on the next plane. And The Town is the talk of the box office this week. Warner Brothers drama of bank robbers opening in the number one spot. More details at SRNnews.com.
What sort of economic advice is President Obama getting from his economic team? Here's outgoing advisor Christina Romer.
The only surefire ways for policymakers to substantially increase aggregate demand in the short run are for the government to spend more and tax less.
Goodbye, Mrs. Romer. We're sure going to miss you.
In my view, we should be moving forward on both fronts.
Now, more than ever, we're trying to make the numbers add up. Talk Radio 860, WGUL. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today, we're looking at shingles and especially looking at the devastation of the post-herpetic neuralgia, which has been described by some patients as experiencing small rockets blowing your skin apart or a lightning storm in the area of the rash. And with me is expert Dr. Maria Carmen Wilson of USF, neurologist and pain medicine expert. And on the phone is Robin, a patient of Dr. Wilson's, who has begun to describe her experience with this very serious illness. And Robin, welcome back. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so you mentioned 3 years ago your development of this rash under the left breast along the bra line, which developed pretty rapidly, correct?
Yes.
And it was diagnosed pretty quickly. It was clear that this was shingles, and you were, in your case, the worst symptom was an unbearable burning itch that you developed there, and it progressed. You went ahead and was put on Elavil, but you had developed side effects. You had to stop the Elavil, so you referred to Dr. Wilson, who began you on Lyrica and Cymbalta. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Maria, would you comment on the Elavil and Lyrica and Cymbalta and the overall medical management of post-herpetic neuralgia?
Certainly. We do have drugs that are indicated, FDA indicated, for the treatment of PHN, post-herpetic neuralgia. And then amongst them, we have pregabalin, which is Lyrica, and Cymbalta. And more recently, there is a patch, which is a highly concentrated capsaicin patch that is now being released. It's called Qtenza. But Elavil has been using for a long, long time, and it is a good medication. However, unfortunately, as we increase the dose, a lot of patients have difficulty tolerating it, especially in the elderly. And this is a complication of zoster that is it affects elderly people. So that is a limiting factor. So the best thing to do certainly is prevention. But we do have those strategies. We also have a lidoderm patch that we can use. So we can use topical agents, and we can use the systemic medications that I alluded to, the Lyrica. Sometimes before the Lyrica, we use a lot of gabapentin as well. That's also effective, and the Cymbalta, and in combination, because they seem to potentiate and have a synergistic effect when used combined. So we don't need a big dose of either one. Therefore, they're better tolerated.
Okay, so just so everyone's clear, you can use, you have the opioid preparations, which, as you mentioned, transdermal, like the lidoderm patch.
Yes.
And also you can have oral opioid preparations.
Opioids, we normally don't use opioids because opioids don't tend to work very well for nerve damage related pain, which is what this is. I guess that if the pain is really severe in the beginning, I may allow the use of opioids, but I don't think that they have a big role in this population for this condition. I much rather use more specific medications like the ones that are indicated.
Now, the tricyclic antidepressants like Elavil, correct?
Yes.
All right, so you mentioned that. That's another class of drug, tricyclic antidepressants. And then... but as Robin mentioned, she had the side effects. What kind of side effects did you have, Robin, with the Elavil?
It just gave me kind of an odd feeling. I didn't really feel correct.
Okay.
In other words, not only did I have the pain, but mentally I didn't feel right. Kind of put me in kind of a depression.
Foggy, okay, depression.
Yeah, kind of a unclear type feel.
All right.
But it didn't help the pain at all.
And then the other category, Maria, that you mentioned is the gabapentin and pregabalin drugs. What class of drugs are those considered?
These are formerly known as anti-epileptic drugs, but they're really neuromodulators because they do a lot more than control epilepsy. They also target pain mechanisms. In particular, these two, gabapentin and pregabalin, prevent release of certain chemicals that transmit pain.
Okay. Is there such a thing as a neuroprotective agent that people are looking at, maybe even, I don't know, maybe in a more of an experimental or trial, to try and prevent the damage to the nerve? Is there such a thing?
There are some compounds that are being looked up, and we were involved in a trial for one of those, but it was very difficult to recruit for that. We did not recruit anybody, I guess, that the informed consent. But yes, there's a lot of things that are under investigation.
Because if I heard you correctly, the cause of the pain is the actual, is it inflammation or actually damage or both to
both,
the nerves?
Both.
Okay. Yeah.
Both. It's like I explained to my patients, imagine an electrical cable that has been denuded from the protection, and you have the copper,
bare nerve.
A bare nerve, exactly, and it's kind of sizzling and is gives spontaneous activity. And the two spontaneous activity, like spontaneous pain, and also extreme sensitivity to light touch and to even clothing. Sometimes it's really difficult for people to bear clothes. This is how painful this can be.
One study, if you would comment, if you're familiar with, one study administered intrathecal, so that's in the spinal cord, methylprednisolone acetate, reported to reduce pain in a study of 227 patients, but additional studies must validate the approach. Do you have a feeling on intrathecal administration of steroids?
Yes, and I'm very familiar with that study. When it came out, everybody really paid attention to that. But it is a more invasive type of procedure. And along those lines, we also recommend paravertebral nerve root blockade. That can be effective as well. And so interventions are indicated, especially in refractory cases. And I have sent some people for the intrathecal methylprednisolone as well. I have.
Do you, can you comment on the results of those patients?
The few patients that I have sent for that have not been able to make a difference pharmacologically have done somewhat better. But I have not seen anybody that's had complete resolution. But probably that's a very refractory population. Mm. This is a percentage of people that no matter what you do, they never go back to normal.
Have some persistent
have the pain, persistent pain.
But the results you've seen are sufficient enough that you would consider sending more patients for that treatment?
In those cases, yes. Mm-hmm. But now that we have this new patch, I would probably use it before going to a more aggressive intervention.
Okay. So Robin is doing very well with Lyric and Cymbalta. Will she be weaned off these medications eventually?
I'm glad you asked that because, yes, now that she's doing well, my goal is to gradually taper her off. A lot of people are able to be tapered off, but there's still a significant percentage for which, unfortunately, there is no relief, and those are the ones that we send for the procedures.
And Robin, are you having any side effects at all from the Lyric or Cymbalta that you've identified?
No, nothing that I can actually say that makes a very big difference. It's just a relief from the pain is mainly what I feel, and that's good enough.
So you're basically able to carry on your life pretty much like it was prior to this eruption.
Yes, very much.
Outstanding. Do you have any questions for Dr. Wilson now that you have this opportunity?
Well, I've talked to her, and I never get a chance. One question I had wanted to ask her is regarding my husband. Would he be a candidate for the vaccine?
Ah, so now you see, you stole our thunder. We're going to spend the next time talking about the vaccine.
Okay.
Why don't we, if you can hang on, that's fine. Before we move on to the vaccine, well, actually a segue would be the fact that prevention is a major concern because, of course, as you intimated earlier, the antiviral medications that one receives in the acute onset of shingles does not prevent the complication of post-traumatic neuralgia. So we look for a way to prevent this, and, of course, vaccine seems to be a very promising avenue to prevent this debilitating pain.
Certainly, we're excited about that because, as we will discuss further later, the vaccine was able to prevent shingles altogether about 50% of the time, and then those that still got it were able to decrease the incidence of the pain by at least 66.5%. So that's exciting.
That's huge. And once again, the question came up that if you've never had chickenpox earlier in your lifetime, are you still at risk to develop shingles?
And the answer is no. The problem is that some people don't remember that they had chickenpox because they were very young or their mothers forgotten or didn't tell them. But if you truly, truly, truly have never had chickenpox, there's no way to get shingles because, remember, it comes from reactivation of the virus that goes to sleep in the spinal cord.
What happens if if you're one of those people that never had chickenpox, never, ever, ever, no question about it, and at a family reunion around the holidays at the end of the year, Uncle Mike has an active case of shingles with exposed vesicles. Are you at risk to develop a disease, a viral disease, contract this virus? And if so, will it present itself as chickenpox at 50 years of age, or will it present itself as shingles?
There are related viruses, so it would initially present most likely as chickenpox. And let me tell you, when chickenpox affects the adult, it's not as benign as it is that like when it affects children. Adults can run into complications, in particular pneumonia, and it can have a more severe, more protracted course. They get a lot sicker. So, it certainly is. It poses a risk.
Chickenpox in the elderly.
Chickenpox in the elderly.
Or even the middle age.
Or in the middle age.
And if you've had the vaccine for chickenpox, all right, if you had the vaccine for chickenpox, can you then develop shingles later in life?
You can, because the potency of that vaccine is not sufficient to induce the kind of immunological response and reaction that is needed to then develop an immunity towards this. So the vaccine for shingles is much, much more potent than the vaccine for chickenpox.
So if you had a vaccine as a child to prevent you from getting chickenpox, and as far as you know, you never got chickenpox.
But you still can. You can still, well, you never got, but you have been exposed to that virus.
You've been exposed to the virus through the vaccine.
Through the vaccine, but never had the disease. And the question is?
Can you develop shingles later in life?
Very, very unlikely.
Okay.
Very unlikely.
So it's a good thing to have the vaccine to chickenpox as a child.
Right.
Because you may have some immunity. Well, actually...
Remember that we lose that immunity as we grow older. And even if you have shingles, which it triggers a big immune response, in time you could actually have a repeat episode. So this is a question that sometimes I get. If I've already had the shingles, will I get it again? Yeah, the answer is that it's not very likely, but it's possible. But then again, it doesn't do any good to do the vaccine too early. The recommendation is to wait a few years, because immediately after that, you are left with that kind of immunity to that. But as time goes by, that is attenuated.
So have you seen patients with shingles, with recurrent shingles in a different dermatome?
I have a handful, but I have. Mm-hmm. I guess that's dating me as I get older. I have a higher chance to see these things. Experience to see these things. I have a couple of patients.
Are there different serotypes of zoster virus, or is just the fact that it's the same identical virus just accessing a different spinal root?
That's what it is. That's what is felt that it is.
And you have to be re-exposed to a different, for example, let's say you've had shingles at 50 years of age, it goes into remission, okay. 10 years, let's say that's across your chest, and then 10 years later you get shingles across your abdomen. What activated that shingles? Is it the same virus that took root in the chest spinal cord that somehow got down to the abdomen, or you re-exposed? How does that? What's the thinking as far as how that happens?
Well, you know, the virus goes dormant, and it may go dormant at different levels, not just at one particular level. It might be that it's multiple levels have been affected where the virus is.
Okay, so at the initial exposure to the chickenpox virus, when it went dormant, it might have went dormant to different levels at the same time.
Correct.
And then reemerged at different times in the future.
Right. This is correct.
Okay.
So
no one wants that.
No.
Okay, Robin, thank you very much. We have another caller. We may talk more about the vaccine, but let's answer your specific question before we move to the next caller. Do you recommend that her husband receive the shingles vaccine? Do you know if your husband had chickenpox? Oh, okay. All right, so generically, though, you recommend the vaccine for shingles to everyone 60 and above?
Yeah, generically, yes, unless there is they're actually too sick or immunosuppressed, where there is a concern that they may develop the illness.
Now, he had the prostate cancer. Does that impact the decision to receive the vaccine?
Not if he's in remission, not if he's currently in remission and not immunosuppressed.
Okay. We're going to go to Dennis while Mike tries to get Robin back. Dennis, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi.
How are things in Clearwater today?
Excuse me?
How are things in Clearwater today?
Fine.
All right. How can we help you?
I got shingles when I was 50 years old.
Okay. Had you had chickenpox when you were a kid?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
And I'm 61 now, and I still have postherpetic neuralgia. I take 600 milligrams of Lyrica, and 60 milligrams of Cymbalta.
Okay.
And I still get the breakthrough pain. It's lessened over the years. It used to be horrible. I mean, where I didn't want to leave the house, but now it's still sensitive to touch all the time. I've gone through all the things the doctor said, and I went to a pain clinic for Dr. Chen in Morton Plant, and he said before he did everything he could. And then I said, what's next? He said, well, pray for a miracle. And then Cymbalta came out, Lyrica. And that was the first time I got some kind of relief. But it still doesn't take it all away.
Maria?
Yeah. Dennis, have you tried the patch, the new patch, Cutenza?
No.
How you spell
but
that,
but I have used capsaicin cream.
Yeah.
Capsaicin cream. Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same. The Cutenza patch is 8% of capsaicin, And it's got to be, there is a way to apply it. There is a technique to apply it, but the results are very promising, and the results show that it may decrease the pain significantly for a period of 3 months, because how it works is depletes substance P, which transmits pain. So I think it will be worthwhile to have the treatment with Qtenza, because it's very non-aggressive and may be quite effective.
How do you spell Qtenza?
Qutenza.
And now, Dennis, you said you tried the capsaicin cream. Is the Qtenza a higher potency, higher dosage of the capsaicin?
8 times greater, yes. It's okay. Much more potent.
Yeah, but I used the capsaicin cream, but all it did was hurt more than the,
that's,
the pain.
Yeah, 2 points. One is the Qtenza is eight times more potent, but secondly, Marie, would you describe how depletion of substance P can actually increase pain initially?
Exactly. And because while that substance P is depleted, it goes into the tissue, and it actually is quite painful. It burns a lot, and it makes things worse in the beginning.
Until it's all depleted.
Until it's all depleted, which is what this high concentration does. Before we apply the patch, we actually treat the skin with local anesthetic, because this is painful, and then the patch is left there for about an hour. We even put some ice packs at time. Then we clean it really well. It may be painful for a while, which we try to avoid with the local anesthetic, but again, all the results that I have seen are very, very good. So if you have not had good results with the capsaicin cream, it still would not dissuade me to recommend that you would give the Qtenza a chance, because the cream, as you know, you have to use it 3-4 times a day. It takes several days to even begin to work, and I have not seen that people are able to keep up with it.
No, I never have been able to.
Exactly.
How frequently is the Qtenza applied?
Well, every 3 months.
Just once every 3 months?
Yes, one every 3 months. This is the advantage.
And it depletes the substance P over how long of a period of time?
During the pain relief, it's up to 3 months.
How long does it take? How long is the painful part of the treatment?
It's about an hour.
Okay,
but
so
again,
after an hour, theoretically, all the substance P has been depleted by that time.
Correct.
Okay, and that's why you want the ice packs on
now,
for about an hour.
Now, where do you put the Qtenza patch?
What it is that the painful area is outlined and then is mapped to the patch, and then the patch is cut to fit that particular area.
So it goes, it's quite a big patch then.
Where's your involvement, Dennis?
I think you said the thoracic from my spine, mm-hmm, to the shoulder, around the shoulder blade, under the arm, to the chest.
That's large. Normally, it's only 1 to 2 dermatomes. If my recommendation would be to still give it a try, if not for the entire area, for as much as it can be covered.
And could you do a repeat, for example, half today and then the other half in a week or two?
I haven't had that. We don't have as much experience to say. I myself, mm-hmm, have only done it in one area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even for someone who has it as long as me, I have it 11 years.
Yes. We're seeing very good results on people that have had very, very protracted symptomatology. And your pain, interventional pain specialist, did he do nerve blocks, and did he actually do the intrathecal methylprednisolone, or what did he do?
He did just about everything.
Okay. You know?
Did he inject the steroid?
I got the, what do you mean by a nerve block? Where they do the...
Inject the anesthetic into the spinal area.
Yes.
Okay.
No, that didn't work.
Did they inject steroid into... Into the spinal column?
No, that I never had.
Like where you have a spinal tap and you can inject steroid into that subarachnoid space?
No.
Okay. So there's two options for you, I think, that we've identified. One is the Qtenza, with a very specific way of applying the therapy. And then the second is the potential for the so-called intrathecal methylprednisolone, where they inject the steroid directly to bathe the spinal cord where it's inflamed and irritated and painful.
Right. Now, I no longer go to a pain doctor. I'd go to my general practitioner.
Here's what we're going to do, because time's running short. Maria, if you'd give a phone number, if Dennis is interested in more information.
Excellent, yes. 813-844-7900.
Okay. Dennis, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, good.
I need to repeat that telephone.
Go right ahead.
813-844-7900.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you, sir. Back to Robin. Robin, are you with us? From Robin from Tampa. Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Robin? Robin, hi there.
Hi.
Okay, let's go right back to the question you had about your husband who had prostate cancer 3 years ago. The question you had was, should he receive the shingles vaccine to prevent potential risk of shingles as well as the development of post-herpetic neuralgia? Maria?
Yes, Robin. The question is, if he's in remission and he's not immunosuppressed, then there is no reason for him not to get the vaccine.
Okay, yes, he is in remission.
He's in remission. Outstanding. Okay.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Robin, and have a great week.
Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you, Robin.
All right, so long now. Okay, we have probably 1:54, 1:55. We have a few more minutes to go. Okay, and let's talk about the risk factors for developing post-herpetic neuralgia.
Well, the main risk factor is age. The older you get, the more likely that you are going to get it. Also, if you have a very severe bout of the shingles, then you're also more likely to get it. And if the prodrome, the time before you have the shingles, is very painful, that also makes you more likely to get the postherpetic neuralgia. Those are the main risk factors.
And, okay, very good. All right. And as far as shingles itself, you mentioned that there's an increased incidence with immune suppression and immune senescence. So thereby, patients on, how about prednisone, patients taking prednisone?
Yes, definitely a risk. A classic scenario, someone is on prednisone for whatever condition and they develop shingles, and definitely.
And would you share with our listeners what you shared with me on break about the anecdotal couple of patients of yours and how they developed shingles?
Well, I've had some young
stress.
Exactly. Well, it doesn't have to be a bad stressful scenario. It could be a joyous occasion. Like one of my patients got remarried late in life, and unfortunately, with all the excitement of the wedding, she developed shingles, and that was a bummer because she developed postherpetic neuralgia, and that kind of spoiled the honeymoon, etc. So better prevent it altogether.
So that's a very interesting and insightful story because, again, once you have those circulating cortisol levels from whether it be a stressful negative situation or a joyous, happy occasion, once the body sees those cortisol levels circulating, then in effect it's like a shot of immune suppression going through the body, and these diseases could express themselves. Okay, well, I'd like to maybe 20 seconds, a take-home message for postherpetic neuralgia.
Well, prevention is key. If you have access and if you can ask your doctor if you're a candidate for it, it's better not to have this horrible, horrible condition.
Excellent. Okay, thank you, Maria. And next week we'll have a very interesting show. We'll be talking with the president of the Florida Medical Association. The title of the show is The Future of Medicine. And we'll be getting her views on the future of medicine as it impacts you, the general public, as well as physicians that are trying to deliver top-quality care. That's next Sunday with the future of medicine, Dr. Madeline Butler, the president of the Florida Medical Association. In the meantime, have a great and healthy week. See you next week.
Now is the time for Reclaiming America, the Taking Back Congress Tour, Thursday, September 30th at the Straz Center in Tampa, featuring insight and inspiration from Bill Bennett and Mike Gallagher. Go to talkradio860.com now for your tickets.
Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack.
When you hear politicians talk about this problem, it's obvious that so many of these people have no clue or understanding about how serious this problem is. And our country is still not willing to admit that there is an epidemic problem of these pills. Why do I care about what's happening in Broward County? The pain clinics in Broward County feed the whole Eastern Seaboard.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show, Sunday nights at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL. midterm elections are just weeks away. It's time we all get involved in reclaiming America. Make plans now to meet Bill Bennett and Mike Gallagher, September 30th at the Straz Center in Tampa. Go to talkradio860.com now for your...